Pleasure to be at this assembly and to worship this morning the Lord. You'll be glad to know that I not only spoke 13 times, but I had to listen to 19 sermons while I was gone. And I needed it. And they were stirring and edifying and helpful. And I come back from the West Coast rather full, but grateful to be home. I always say as I'm coming in that airplane, if just get me back to Louisville, Lord, I don't need anything else. I'd be grateful to you. Thankful for your prayers and grateful for your encouragement. I want to speak to you this morning about Moses. I want to talk to you about faith in life stages. Faith is not a static thing. It's not something you have in a certain dimension or you don't have. It is a dynamic sort of experience. The Lord only twice in all his associations with people and his public teaching career said, "Great is your faith." Amazingly, it was not to his disciples. He frequently said to them, "How weak. Small is your faith. You have little faith." But to a woman from Syrophoenicia up north in Tyre and Sidon, he said, "I haven't seen so great faith." And to a Gentile centurion in the city of Caesarea, he said, "Never so great a faith as this." And there was one father who was beseeching the Lord to bless his child. And the Lord said some things to him, and he said, "Increase my faith. Increase my faith." If I can read with you this morning from a section of Hebrews chapter 11, beginning with verse 24. "By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, accounting the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked to the recompense of reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, that the destroyer of the firstborn should not touch them. And by faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, essaying to do, were swallowed up." I didn't begin where the story really began, before Moses was even born, down in the land of Egypt, where a group of Hebrews were enslaved by a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph and who did not care about them. They lived in a region that was rich because that's where the Pharaoh of Joseph's day had placed them. And it just so happened it was in easy access to the Pharaoh, who decided that he not only wanted these people to be slaves and to come and provide slave labor for his building enterprises, but he didn't want them to be a threat. And so he said to the Hebrew midwives, "I want you to destroy every male child that's born." Well, he chose the wrong people to carry out his work because they just feared God and not the command of the king. And their faith is rather noteworthy, because Pharaoh was all-powerful in Egypt, and he could take their lives away. It wasn't a matter of just taking away their social security. They were facing the power of a monarch who could simply have them executed on the spot. And yet they feared God rather than the command of the king. And they did not kill these little babies. And then when Pharaoh gave up on that enterprise and seemed not even be disposed to punish them, he told his people to do it. But I can tell you that Amram and Jochebed must have heard a lot of stories about little babies being seized, thrown into the Nile, about the cry of a child, the cry of a newborn infant being heard somewhere in an Egyptian neighborhood and people coming in and taking them away, soldiers perhaps. So when they had a child, they really had a child by faith. And then when that child was born and they saw it was a goodly child, they hid him for 3 months. Now, I don't know if we can get back into this picture or not. But these people are the absolute minions of the king. They don't even have their freedom to move about. They are slaves. And now their children are forfeit. They've been told not to let the children live. You talk about abortion. I suppose this would be a time when people might want to rid themselves of a prospective child because of what was ahead. Might as well rid the womb of the child before the child must be destroyed after it comes to birth. But that wouldn't have been pleasing to God. It wasn't pleasing to God that Pharaoh began to exercise this kind of brutal treatment upon the people. But see the faith. By faith, verse 23 said, we didn't read that. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months by his parents. In talking with Tommy Porch, who was with me in California, about the work in China, he gave me some more insights into what it was like to teach and to preach there. And someone was asking if he preached in China, and then his son is over there, and is he preaching in China? And of course, their impression was of somebody standing like I am here at this pulpit before some, well, not so large a group, but, you know, someone stands up in some public hall and then he begins to preach. Well, that's not possible in China. You can't do that. Worship assemblies took place in secret places, inside rooms that were determined safe, and different places every time. And sometimes the gatherings took place in city parks, as distant as they could get from other people. And worship in song, as Tommy said, he could lead singing in China. He just whisper it. You whisper it. He said he's seen these new Christians with tears streaming down their faces as they whisper these hymns in the secret places where they cannot be ferreted out by the secret police or other people who are by very nature taught to inform. It is a heroic act to inform on the foreigners or anybody who might depart from the party line. What I'm saying to you is that that's the kind of experience that these Hebrews had in Egypt. They couldn't do anything they wanted to do. They couldn't serve God. They couldn't even protect their own children. So stories of infants thrown away like so much refuse must have come to Amram and Jochebed, but they hid the child, didn't fear the king, saved that boy. And of course, we're all blessed because of that. It's interesting to see all these great words, these verbs that are used about Moses. Beginning with verse 24, he refused. You ever refused anything in the name of God? Said, I'm not going to do that. Says he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And then another verb, choosing. You ever chosen something openly, decisively, because that's right? Not because it's pleasant. Not because if you do that, everything is going to turn out just right. I mean today and tomorrow, and everything will be happy in association with it. And then it says, accounting the reproach of Christ greater riches. Then verse 27, he forsook Egypt. These are decisive kind of terms. And one reason that some of us never are able to be what God wants us to be is we can't be decisive, or we are not. We continue to handle our lives in that sort of indecisive way that characterizes failure. It always will be a failure. We may evaluate the issues. We may look at the situation, but we never can quite bring ourselves to decisively move in a certain direction. Look at the story. This is the story of a man who pleased God. This is the story of a man who not only pleased God, but was a blessing to hundreds of thousands of other people, and whose name lives in the memory of all that love God, and who shepherded for a long while a group of people who were destined to be the means of bringing into the world the Savior who died for us. So we're in debt to Moses, but we need to look at his life. He was a young man, but he made resolves on the basis of his faith. But now I want to look at how his faith grew. First 40 years. Sometimes I think about Moses getting to be 13 years old and deciding to go out and take care of those Egyptians, but he wasn't 13, was he? How old was he? 40 years. I had to learn something in California. I tell you, if you ask a rhetorical question out there at Miller Avenue, they'll answer you. One brother in the lesson learned that very ably. He began to discuss the assignment he was given about David and the immensity of the subject and given 30 minutes to do it in. And he said, don't I have something to complain about? And some brother in the lesson said, no. I said, well, you know, you learn. And I learned. People would respond. You ask a question, you get an answer. So, in this particular case, this young man was 40 years old before he made that decision. So what I want you to look at is what happened in those first 40 years. We're told the story of how he was found by Pharaoh's daughter, who had come down to the river to bathe. I would think that the king's daughter had a better place to take a bath than the river, but that's what it said. And the mother of Moses had made an ark, a little boat, out of papyrus, bulrushes. Papyrus, you know, that's the stuff they made paper out of. Something to write on in those days. And it's a known fact that the Egyptians built boats, large boats, out of papyrus, as a matter of fact. One gentleman from the Scandinavian countries attempted to establish that you could sail in such a boat all the way from Egypt out into the Pacific and across, but I think it got a little waterlogged, but he did prove some things. But she put that little boy at age 3 months in this papyrus boat, and she pitched it so it wouldn't sink, and then she laid it among the reeds along the riverbank. What did she know? Do you think this mother had any idea that something like this would happen? She was only doing what she could to protect the child. And she set Miriam, the sister of Moses, there to watch for him. And the Pharaoh's daughter came and saw him, and he was crying. What would you have been doing if you were 3 months old out in a little old boat on the water, and your mother's left you, and she's not around, and you're crying for attention, and perhaps hungry? And she felt compassion for the child. She knew who the child was. She said, it's one of the Hebrew children. And she knew why I was there. Had it been any other Egyptian, perhaps another story. Well, we found one of these children from the Hebrews, you know, those people that are creating all kind of havoc for us. And so let's see that this child is destroyed. Just drown the child now. It's a convenient place. We'll just rid the world of this child. But she showed compassion. And she named him Moses, because he had been drawn out of the water. Well, of course, Moses is a common Egyptian name. Tutmos, M-O-S-E, it's just a form. And there's one form of this means male child. And she named him that, but Miriam, who was very quick, said, well, would you like one of the Hebrew women to take care of this child for you? And she said, yes, you see to that matter. And so she took her to her own mother. I don't know how long Moses stayed with his parents. We're just not told that. But somewhere along the line, when he was able to do it, weaned and ready for the change, he was sent over to live with the daughter of the Pharaoh. Now, that would have been a pretty tough kind of shift from home and mother and dad and sister, and then you got to go over and live in this strange place. That's like the English who send their children off to a boarding school about as soon as they're able to eat breakfast by themselves. That's the way. I'm not speaking ill of the English, but that's just the way they do things. It seems like they just think they just need to get out of the house and the way. Get about 6 years old, send them off to boarding school. A little older, send them to boarding school. But he's taken off to a strange place. But I'll tell you, the place where he went was a wonderful place too. And there was accessible to him, as the daughter of the princess, all the glory of Egypt. And the 7th chapter of Acts, where Stephen, in recounting the history of his nation, tells us the story in verse 22. And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and deeds, or works. So Moses got an education. I mean, he got a superlative education. He got an education's equivalent. Well, he went to Harvard, went to Princeton. And then he got his graduate work at Oxford. He was filled with all the information that the Egyptians could fill him for. But that's not all. He had other things. Power. And access to pleasurable things. And so like a young man. He was doing what a lot of young people do. He was finding out all the world had to offer. You're excited. Young people are excited about the world that they're living in. New finds. New discoveries. And there are all kinds of things out there. There's a find every moment. And you've never experienced this before. And so you're trying to do what the beer commercial says. You're trying to get all the gusto. I tell you, these beer commercials, which I don't listen to very much. If you're a sports fan, you got to listen to them almost. It's a sad commentary on this country that they let the beer industry support the sports industry, which is supposed to be the health-giving, wonderful, wholesome kind of activity. Baseball is as American as apple pie. And then who sponsors it? Some beer company who just regales us. Time, how wonderful, this is a Michelob time. I mean, this is a time for Michelob. And I don't know how much this is going home. But with young people, I'd say something of it. Otherwise, they're sure wasting their money. And I address myself, young people who are Christians. Don't listen to this garbage. But what they're telling you is that this is your moment. And you're young and you're vital and all these opportunities are yours. To just savor everything that's around. Take a taste of it. Maybe a good deep drink of it. But Moses did that. Remember Solomon, Ecclesiastes? He said, I tried it all. I sought pleasure. I sought enjoyment. I built. And I accumulated wealth. First two chapters of Ecclesiastes describes all that he did. And he was in a position to do it. Moses was in a position to do it. Young people, you're in a position to do it too. And it's going to be attractive. As a matter of fact, as a consequence of this, it says that Moses was mighty in word and deed. In other words, he was a well-informed and confident man who had behind him his position and all his education and all his opportunity to live any way he wanted to live. He was in a position to do it. He had two courses open to him as he faced all this. Number one, he could say, I'm going to get more. I've got a lot, but I'm going to get more. Or he could be wise and say, what have I got now? And if I get some more of this, just exactly what is it going to do for me? I tell you, so many of us live for the moment. There's a difference in living moment by moment in faith in God and living for the moment without ever looking down the road. Some of us don't look down the road. We just live for the moment. What I want to do now? What would feel good now? What would please me now? No concern whatsoever to the consequence in the future at all. Just blinded. Intentionally blinded. And it's an experience of young people sometimes. They don't have the perspective. And therefore they just simply live for this particular moment. And it's up to us, isn't it? You can say that I like this money and I like these cars and I like these good times and I like these friends and everything is fine. I want to be accepted and here we go. And no concern for how this is going to turn out or what the consequence is going to be. I'm just going to live for the moment. And go for all the enjoyment that I can find, and then you'll have to pay. But wouldn't it be wiser to ask yourself some important questions? If I had all that the world offers in this way, would I have anything? What's life about? What's the purpose of it? Solomon had that question answered to him as a result of his experience, but I'm telling you, it was rather late when he got the answer. And he'd like to help us see better. And the story of Moses could help too. But that's how Moses began. He knew he was a Hebrew. He knew where mom and dad were. He'd been taught that. You know who your parents are too. You know what they stand for. Wasn't a question in Moses' mind, I'm sure, about his parents. I mean, they were committed people. They feared God. They didn't fear the king. They didn't look with any kind of high regard on all that Pharaoh stood for. All they saw in him was a despotic ruler who was abusing their people and was brutal. And they were trusting God to deliver them from that. And Moses knew that. We know it too, don't we, young people? But sometimes all this glory of the world, all these things out here that we can do and think and say and have, and that for the first time, it's just so attractive. But you better stop and ask, what is the end of this? Solomon said, it's good to be young. 11th chapter toward the end of Ecclesiastes. He said, rejoice in your youth. Enjoy your youth. But remember that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. I'll tell you what Moses did at last. At last he considered. He thought about this thing. And he said, it's a better thing for me to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasure of sin for a little while. I tell you something. I believe you could figure that out without a lot of information. That unless life has no significance whatsoever and we're going to die like dogs and that's all there is to it, and we never have to face God in judgment, we never have to give account of what we've done, unless that's the case, and that's unbelievable. That there is no justice in this world. That nobody ever has to be brought to book for the wickedness that he does. That there's no price to pay for the wrong choices. But unless that is the case, then it ought not to take too much work on our part to realize that I have got some thinking to do about the kind of behavior I'm involved here with. What's it going to lead to? Well, Moses just made up his mind. As I said, he wasn't 13. He wasn't 18. He wasn't 21. He was 40 years old when he went out among his people and decided to identify with them. He knew who he was, but he hadn't made the identity yet. He had not identified himself with the cause and needs of his people. And you're going to have to make up your mind about this, too. You can think about your parents' faith, but that's not going to do you any good unless you exercise your own. Do you have any faith? Faith begins when we're young, with a choice. A lot of people say, I'd like to believe, but I just can't bring myself to do it. Well, you don't want to. That's the reason. If you wanted to believe, you'd believe. Faith is an act of will. It always has been. So the people that don't believe because they don't want to believe, and people that believe because they want to believe. Now, if you've been excusing yourself and saying, no, I want to believe, but I just can't get enough evidence. You don't want to believe. And when you want to believe, you'll believe. There's evidence here. And plenty. That was enough for Moses. Now, I'll tell you what he didn't do. He didn't say, I tell you, that's exciting to be out there with that slave group. I think that would be a real kick. Get out there with those slaves and unite with them. We could really kick up a fuss. And it would be fun to go out there and get knocked in the head every time you did anything that the taskmaster didn't like. Beat up, spat at, cursed and afflicted. That'd be wonderful. I'd love it. He knew what was coming. This is not a case for us today, I want to tell you, joining up with Christ Social Club. Those of us who teach others sometimes are guilty of that sort of thing. You need to be a Christian. It'll be wonderful. It will be wonderful. Everything will start, everything wrong now. Well, it'll be right tomorrow. If you'll be a Christian, you won't have any more of these troubles and problems. There won't be any more challenges. Burdens will just disappear. Besides all that, you'll get to associate with some of the most wonderful people you ever met. And you'll enjoy their company. And not only, this is especially possible if you've got a congregation like Douglas Hills with all these lovely people. And they were just so personally concerned about you. And you can really invite people to that. Like a friend of mine said, he had a fellow come into the service and he said, this is wonderful. He said, this is wonderful. What do I have to do to join this group? Well, he said, right now, sign, sit down here and sign. You didn't say, just sign on the dotted line. You're in. No, that's not the way it is. You're not joining some social club when you come to Christ. You're making up your mind about which direction you're going to take in life, and you're recognizing that when I choose the Lord, I'm going to suffer affliction. We might as well tell people it's the truth. You will suffer affliction as a Christian. Are there blessings to be had? There are innumerable blessings. But some of those blessings, I remind you, some of those blessings come by suffering. And one of them is a growing faith. So, let's don't mealy-mouth around. The Lord has said by the Apostle Paul that all that live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. Let us face the fact that Paul said to the brethren in Galatia, in the 14th chapter of Acts, that we have all been called to affliction. We're all going to suffer affliction. And so Moses did that. Don't try to attract people to the Lord by saying you get to come down here and be with us. And that ever after, everything's going to be all right. Leave that to Reverend Ike. He'll tell everybody that if you come to the Lord, everything will be... Here's a little jingle I got. If you want pie in the sky by and by, Reverend Ike is not your guy. If you want your cake and eat it too, Reverend Ike's the guy for you. How about that? That's his theme. And Reverend Ike is blatant about it, but I'm telling you something. We've got a lot of other preachers that are telling folk that if you're a Christian, you ought not to be sick and you ought not to ever suffer. No excuse for that. If you're a Christian, everything ought to be fine. Well, that's a lie. It comes straight from the mind of the devil. It's a choice between the now and eternity. That's the choice. Whether you're going to serve the present or you're going to serve the future. And the future is with the Lord. If you don't serve the Lord, then you're serving in a hopeless cause. And Moses just looked down the road and said, that's the way it is. And I know who's going to win ultimately. But then that was an act of faith, wasn't it? That was saying, the Lord is going to win. Some of us look at our present situation and we say, this can't turn out right. I can't stand it. Right now, here and there, I cannot stand this. I cannot bear this. And so, I'm going to serve the present. I'm going to get out of this mess I'm in any way I can get out. I will not accept this kind of affliction. I will not accept this kind of burden. If Moses had said that, he would never have left Egypt. And we'd not even know anything about it. But he chose. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to suffer affliction rather than enjoy the pleasure of sin for a season. Then we get to the second 40 years. Not all of us are going to have so many. He lived a bit longer than most of us do. Now he's 40 years old and he goes out, as the Exodus record tells us, and he sees this Egyptian taskmaster beating up on a Hebrew slave. And it just goes against the grain. Flies all over. And he looks to the right and he looks to the left and sees that nobody of any importance is watching him, and he just kills the taskmaster. Buries him. The next day, this is a man who's confident. This is a man who's taken a stand. Has he not taken a stand? He said, I'm going to identify with the Hebrews. I'm going to help my people. I am going to help my people. I am Moses, the daughter of the son of the daughter of Pharaoh, and I will help the people. I'll take my position and I'll take my skills and I'll help my people. And the next day he sees two of his brethren quarreling, and now he's going to be their judge and helper. And he said, now look, here's what you ought to do. Here's what you ought to do. And one of them said, what are you going to do? Kill me like you killed the Egyptian? And Moses knew it's all out of the bag. And he was right, because Pharaoh even then was looking for him to kill him. Now, Moses is decided. Moses has chosen. But I want to tell you something about his faith. There is still about his faith this idea of, I, Moses, will do something for the Lord and for his people. He is going to do it all by himself from his position and by his strength. It didn't work, did it? It did not work. He's a shattered man. A shattered man. He said, here I am. I decided I was going to help the Lord and help the Lord's people and do something good for my people, and I tried with all I could, and look at this. See? Didn't work. Making a difference. He was wanting to make a difference, and we have to commend him for that. He is identifying with the oppressed. But it did not work. Now, he goes down to the Sinai. 40 years of silence. Ran into a man with 7 daughters. One of them became his wife. And he was a sheep herd. That's what he did for his father-in-law. Herded sheep in and around Mount Sinai. And there's a long period. We don't know anything that's happening to this man down in the desert. But I tell you one thing we know about Moses as we see the events that take place very soon afterward. He's an emptied man. I mean, he doesn't have any confidence in himself at all. This, a man mighty in word and deed. Son to the princess. All the power of Egypt at his feet. Possibilities for great things. And he gave that all up to help his people. And what did he get for it but a slap in the face? And it didn't work. None of it worked. And so here we go. Some of us, we start out that way too. We accept the Lord. We make a decision for him. We are baptized into his death and raised by the power of God and his mercy and forgiveness to a new life. And we're ready to do something. And it's good. I thrill at the new Christian who just says, what can I do? What can I do? I'm ready. Who can I talk to? I'll talk to somebody else about this. I wonder about the person who's newborn in Christ, or supposedly newborn in Christ, who has no interest whatsoever in talking to anybody else about it. In fact, they just like to keep this thing quiet, if you don't mind. I just don't publicize it. That's no conversion. There is no conversion into Christ that does not cause that individual to want to go out and do something for the Lord. Want to tell this story. Share it with somebody else. That is not a I can't see how it could possibly be a conversion. How could somebody undergo this tremendous transformation and taking off in a totally different direction and with a total different value system and it's making a difference in his life. He's a forgiven individual and he looks to the future with great hope and confidence and he doesn't want to say anything about it to anybody. You tell me. I don't see how that's possible. I don't believe it's possible. You watch. It's the new Christians who are teaching people. And the older ones are saying, sure is good to be a Christian. I love to be in this congregation. It's a wonderful congregation. I just love to be here. It's just good to be here. Well, we've probably tried, you see. Some of us have tried. We tried to teach somebody. It didn't work. Yeah, I tried to teach someone and it didn't work. So I just gave up on that. I decided that was a hopeless cause. And we're just like Moses. We come to this stage in our life and we think we'll do it by ourselves. A lot of us do it, but we don't pray. I know we must think we can do it by ourselves. We don't pray. We don't need God in the picture. He's the court of last appeal. When you get in bad trouble and you can't figure out any way to take care of it yourself. And you've worked on it yourself, and you've worked on it, worked on it, worked on it, and no help. Then you've got to talk to God about it. Well, Moses is just like that. You say, you mean Moses? Yeah, Moses was like that. I don't know whether he was praying to the Lord all this 40 years in the wilderness and standing in close contact with him. I can't say about that. I don't want to overdraw the case. But what I'm saying is, basically, you've got a man who started out saying, I'm going to serve the Lord, and now he's down there in the wilderness serving his father-in-law. And not doing much of anything except herding those sheep. And being a good family man, I suppose. And then the Lord appeared to him. Now we got that last 4 years. 7th chapter of Acts, verse 30. And when 40 years were fulfilled, an angel appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai in a flame of fire in a bush. And when Moses saw it, he wondered at the sight. And as he drew near, to behold, there came a voice of the Lord, I am the God of thy fathers, the God of Abraham and Isaac and of Jacob. And Moses trembled and did not dare to look. And the Lord said to him, loose the shoes from your feet, for the place whereon you stand is holy ground. I have surely seen the affliction of my people that is in Egypt, and have heard their groaning, and I am come down to deliver them, and now come, and I will send you into Egypt. And Moses said, me? Read the Exodus account. The Lord said, I want to send you back to the Pharaoh, and you tell him to let my people go. They are my firstborn. And I want them released by Pharaoh. And he said, Lord, who am I? I'm not your man. Not me. Who would I say sent me? Well, you tell them that I am that I am has sent you. And as you look through, there are a series of excuses that Moses makes for not being the one to do this. I'm telling you, this is not the same man that came out and struck that Egyptian taskmaster and then tried to settle his his brethren's dispute. This is a man who has utterly no confidence at all now. He had confidence in himself before, and now he doesn't have any confidence in himself at all, and he doesn't have any confidence. And so the Lord has to stir him up. And he said, you just go over there and you gather the elders of the children of Israel together and tell them that I've sent you, and then you get yourself to Pharaoh and tell him to let the people go. He said, they're not going to believe me. They're not going to believe me. How can they won't believe me. I'll go over there and tell them, well, the Lord's appeared to me. They won't believe me. He said, well, in that case, then I'll just give you some signs that'll convince them. First of all, what is that you got in your hand? That's got my shepherd's rod here. Well, you take that rod and throw it down. He threw it down. It's a snake. Then he picks it up by the tail, and it's a rod again. And then he said, you stick your hand right there in your shirt front and see what happened. He did that and brought it out, and it's a leopard. Then he put it back in. He said, it's clean again. And then he said, if they don't listen to you then, you just go get some water out of the Nile and pour it out, and it's going to be blood. And they'll believe you. Oh, what? No. I'm no spokesman. I can't talk. Educated by the Egyptians. All the wisdom of Egypt in his head, and he can't talk. No, I'm not. I can't talk. Oh, he said, who do you think made your mouth? I know what you can do. And what I'm saying is, you're going to go speak for me. And then Moses, after he had to face that, you know, some of us said, well, no, I'm not the one to, I can't do that. I just can't speak. I can't talk to anybody about the gospel. No. I'm not the man. It just ties my tongue. I just cannot do it. Cannot say anything to anybody about that. And the Lord's going to say that. I know. I made your mouth. I know what you can do. And so he said, well, but I'm not eloquent and I'm not the man. Well, then, all right, he said. And by this time, the Lord is disgusted with his servant. And he said, you got Aaron. Aaron can go and speak for you. And finally, he's persuaded to go. But you see, what he's saying is, I can't. So some of us go from being able in our confidence in ourselves to do anything we think, to inability to do anything. We're just stripped of everything. And now, in this last 40 years, this humble man has to be taught that with God's help, you can do anything. And now Moses says, you've got to go with me. You have got to go with me. I can't go down there by myself. You've got to go with me. And so at last he's understanding what it means to humble himself before the mighty hand of God and acknowledge that he can't do anything. That's the truth of the matter. He cannot do anything. He has no power, nor skill, nor ability, but with God's help he can accomplish it. And so now he wants God very near to him. I tell you, some of the problem with many of us is that we haven't wanted God very near to us. We have not wanted him in our lives. We have not wanted his word coming in to remind us about the things we ought not to be doing and the things we ought to be doing. We haven't invited him to come in. He is an intrusion. We don't mind going to church, but having the Lord close at hand all the time, that is an intrusion. It's not an intrusion. It is a necessity for the Christian. We're not going to accomplish anything unless we recognize that God must rule in our lives and his power must drive us. So Moses learned that lesson. He became quite a mighty man, you know. But not when he was trying to figure out how he could enjoy the world. And not when he was trying to figure out how he could do God's will by his power. But he became a mighty man when he was emptied of himself entirely and was willing to do whatever at last God would ask him to do. I see through that early experience of bringing those plagues upon Egypt that God's having to always kind of push him out the door every day. And Moses said, well, this doesn't look like it's working, Lord. He's not listening. That's all right. You just get on out there. We'll take care of that. It's going to be all right. He's going to do what I say. You just watch. And it's interesting, after that's all over, it's a different man that stands beside the Red Sea and lifts that rod and the water apart. That's a different man. I mean, man has confidence, not in himself. By this time, he knows, I am that I am, can do it. God can do it. He knows that. Some of us, I'm afraid, don't know that. We don't know that God is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think. We don't live our lives with that confidence. We're either empty of all confidence or we are full of the wrong kind. Until we come to be this kind of servant, our faith is weak and our faith is impotent. 32nd chapter of Exodus, and then the lesson is yours. This is Moses as he comes to strength. He's come back from Mount Sinai with the tablets of stone, the laws written on. And what meets his wandering eye when he returns from the top of Sinai but the children of Israel dancing around a golden calf down there like a bunch of fools? As if they never heard of God Almighty at all, as if the servant of God had not gone up to receive the law, as if they had not said just 40 days before, "We will keep your commandments." And so he throws the thing down in his discouragement. You know what? The Lord meets him and he says, "You know, Moses, let me kill all these people. I'll just wipe these people out. And then I'll take you and I'll make a great nation." I tell you, if it had been the Moses of the first 40 years, he said, "That's right, Lord. I like it. I can do it. I'll be the father of a great nation. We'll really get this thing done." But it's not the same Moses. You know what Moses said? Look at verse 30. "And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses said to the people, 'You have sinned a great sin, and now I will go up to the Lord. Peradventure I shall make atonement for your sin.' And Moses returned to the Lord and said, 'Oh, this people have sinned a great sin and have made them gods of gold. Yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written.'" Forgive these people. But these are the same people Moses has been driving you crazy all the time. I know. They've been telling me all along that it's better they should have died in Egypt where they had something to eat than be out here in this miserable wasteland. They've been bellyaching, complaining all up and down the countryside about how this is worse than it was in Egypt. They've just forgotten, of course. And they've been attacking me time after time. But I'll tell you something. I love these people. And so he says something immense here. You think you love people that are lost? You think you love people that are in danger before the wrath of God? He says, forgive them, please. But if you won't forgive them, then just blot me out too. Turn down the opportunity to be a big shot. Have a race of his own. Because he loved these people. I mean, this is a man that's grown up. This is a man who has become selfless. This is a man who understands how God feels about the people now. I can't explain all the implications of this statement. Paul made a similar one in the 9th chapter of Romans. "I could wish myself," he said, "anathema for my people." For my people. He loved his people. And he wanted them to be saved. Moses loved these people in spite of all their stubbornness and in spite of all their failures and their weaknesses. He loved these people and he was willing to sacrifice himself for their redemption. Because his faith had grown. How do you relate to people? Are you deeply concerned about them? Or are you like Moses in the first 40 years, got your head buried down in all those good things? You're ear deep into the slop. You can't see anything for all the good times you're having, all the wonderful things you're doing. Or maybe you're Moses of the second 40 years. Maybe you're the person that tried a little bit and you were just really excited at the first and you thought you'd do it all by some wisdom and skill of your own and it didn't work, so you just went into the wilderness. So you're herding your sheep somewhere out there. And the Lord is saying to you, "You go speak for me." And he's not going to accept any excuse from us. He's not going to accept this excuse, "But oh, well, I'm not the man." Well, you are the man. You are the one. The Lord chose you. You chose. And the reason you are is because he's able to do some things with you that you can't do, but he can do it. Now, the question is if you're willing to live your life in intimate association with him. So that every day you call him into your life and say, "Come, go with me. Because I can't do it by myself." And if you'll do that, he'll do some great things to you. He'll cause you to be the kind of individual that just absolutely sacrifices yourself for others. See how faith grows? Each one of us can take Moses' story and evaluate himself. Say, "Here's where I am. Here's where I am. Here's where I am. But here's where I need to be. That's what I want. That's what I want to accomplish by this. Here's where I need to be." All of us need to be at last, that last 40 years. Empty of ourselves, full of God, ready to serve other people.
every way we can for their eternal well-being. Are you a Christian? Have you decided that? If you got all this world had to offer, it wouldn't be enough. Have you realized it? You choose to believe. Moses chose. You can choose. You can choose. You can choose now. Where are you? Are you discouraged because you tried a little bit and you failed? Seek the help of God. And empty yourself so He can fill it. And then go on and earn His service. You can decide that. Moses did. While we're standing.